This is The Guardian.
Neue Reifen in den Zeiten, also die spare ich mir.
Besser? Du sparst dieses Jahr bei der Kfz-Versicherung. Jetzt bei ATU günstig Reifen kaufen oder Räder wechseln und eine von 100 Kfz-Versicherungen für ein Jahr gewinnen. Mehr auf atu.de. Bei Auto besser.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. Brazil are good, aren't they, Barry? Two goals and a scintillating second half performance, a ludicrous bench of attacking talent. Richarlison is the star, one tap in and one absolute beauty against Serbia, who are quite a good football team despite doing virtually nothing tonight. Also today, Ronaldo will get the headlines for becoming the first man to score in five World Cups. But just imagine if Iñaki Williams hadn't slipped over as he tried to Dion Dublin Diogo Costa. It would have been glorious. As it was, Portugal held on to beat Ghana 3-2. Five goals, which is five more than most games. It seems at this World Cup, Uruguay and South Korea failed to score in a reasonably interesting afternoon runaround. Probably more exciting than Switzerland's 1-0 win over Cameroon. African football not having a great tournament so far. Also today, a short World Cup quiz. Probably some moaning about the amount of football there is. Your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning, welcome.
Hello, Max.
Hello, Jonathan Faduba.
Hello.
And live from the media centre. Where are you, Wilson?
I'm in the main media centre in Doha.
Is it nice?
It's very nice, actually. It's huge. There's a restaurant, there's a cafe, there's a Muk cafe. There's free coffee and water. Am I being a hypocrite by drinking water provided by the Qataris? Maybe I am.
Yes, you are.
I don't think you should drink any water.
Are there not lavish buffets as far as the eye can see that you just dip your snout into free? I keep hearing about them from Newcastle and Manchester City fans.
I mean, there is a buffet that I went to. Let me see how much it costs. I had to pay for it. It was 53 reals, which is... That was not bad, actually. 11, 12 quid, something like that.
Okay. Was it a good buffet?
I mean, it was quite mediocre, but it was broccoli on it, which looked like a vegetable.
Okay. Brazil 2, Serbia 0 then. Paul in the first half tweeted, I bet even Tottenham-centric Max and the rest of the pod can't believe he picked Richarlison over Jesus. Utterly anonymous first half from Richarlison. Dee Withers says, Richarlison being Spursy and just starting at half-time. And Luke says, what does Barry have planned for his winnings when Richarlison lifts the golden boot? Hashtag Mystic Baz. Hashtag doing better than Benteke. Let's talk about that second Richarlison goal, Barry. It was heavenly, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, let's give credit to Vinicius Jr. for the cross, first of all. He was, I thought, outstanding. His ability to pick out teammates in the box with deliveries is superb, but he rolled the ball into Richarlison, who flicked it up in the air and then scored it in a absolutely sublime, I'm saying, a scissors kick. And I think it was the goal of the tournament so far, but I can only remember that game, so there might have been better ones.
I think you're giving Vinicius Jr., I mean, he is obviously brilliant, a little bit of credit, just say rolled it in. I mean, I thought that ball was actually impossible to control, Wilson, and like that first touch was so there was nothing like Richarlison to get a first touch that would enable him to have any sort of chance of shooting was pretty impressive.
Do you think he did that deliberately?
The first touch,
the flick over the shoulder. I mean, I
okay, yes.
I mean, look,
I think he tries to cushion the ball. I think there's very little
he
can do.
No, that's the point. Hmm. Yeah, he tries to cushion a ball that's quite difficult for him. I don't think he meant to flick it over his shoulder like that, but then he reacts brilliantly having done that. So it's not like a bad first touch, but I don't think the first touch intended to send it looping over his right shoulder.
All right. Where do you stand on this, Jonathan?
On whether he meant to flick it or whether it was a good goal?
I mean, if you don't think it's a good goal, fair enough, but you have a very high bar. Whether that first touch was intentional or not, am I giving him too much credit?
I think you're giving him credit, but the way he manipulates it to be able to score it is still incredible. I think the only other goal maybe that could match it is the Saudi Arabia second goal against Argentina. That was a pretty good strike. But yeah, Richarlison's looking pretty good. I thought the first half they were kind of struggling to find a rhythm. Neymar dropping quite deep. And then second half, they just started to turn on the star, really. And I agree with Barry. I think Vinicius was one of the best players. And then when Rodrigo came on, he's sort of equally as good. So they've got quite a few options from the bench as well. So a pretty impressive performance.
I saw Copper 90, you know, tweeting a picture of that Richarlison strike and saying, hang it in the Louvre. I just start thinking, if my mum went to the Louvre and there were just all these pictures of football, the whole thing, even if I went, I'd be like, I don't need this. You know, I don't need to see Aguero running off. Just someone just printed it out and hung it in the Louvre. But anyway.
And you wouldn't say it the other way around, would you?
No.
Like you wouldn't take, I don't know, the Mona Lisa and say, chuck that in the box at Anfield.
No. So stick it in the mixer. Absolutely right. It's a one-way analogy, isn't it? It just doesn't work.
I think it's a no-way analogy. I think it's a terrible analogy, yeah. And people who say that should be shot.
Well, I mean, I guess you could take Michelangelo's David and say, you know, stick that up top for Wimbledon in the 90s and could do a job, possibly. Anyway, we were debating which game should start, and you said Brazil, obviously, Wilson, because they were really good in that second half. And I guess if you think of the really dominant displays so far in the World Cup, England were very dominant against a bad Iran team. Spain were very dominant against a bad Costa Rica team. Serbia aren't a bad team. They didn't play brilliant tonight, but Brazil took them apart in that second half.
Yeah, I mean, I'm slightly uncomfortable about the use of the word bad there. I think Serbia are clearly better than Costa Rica or Iran, sure. And therefore to beat them is a harder thing, and this is a much harder test for them. I think there was three real questions about this Brazil team. Yeah, they've been on this great run of one defeat in 27 games, something like that, before tonight. But three questions were that they'd only played the Czech Republic in March 2019. That was the only European team they'd played since losing to Belgium in the quarterfinal last time. Could they cope against the physicality and intensity of a European team? Well, that Serbia team is incredibly physical, and that just didn't seem a problem. The second question is, to get in the four forward players, it means they only have two deep-lying midfielders. Is that midfield of Casemiro plus Lucas Paqueta or Fred, possibly against tougher opponents, is that going to be good enough defensively? We don't know. I mean, there was no problems tonight, and Serbia finished above Portugal, but they are a good side, albeit missing Dusan Vlahovic and Mitrovic, I think, not fully fit. And I think possibly that condition, just how sort of cautious they were. But it didn't seem a problem tonight, and Serbia are a level above, any, you know, as you were saying, Iran or Costa Rica. So, you know, there's no worries there, certainly. The third thing is they do have some quite hard-headed players up front. How would they cope if things are going wrong? Well, the first half it could have got frustrating and didn't. So I think that's probably a positive sign, even the first sort of 10 minutes of the second half. So I think one question absolutely answered. Two of the questions, at least the question hasn't got become a stronger question. So I think that sort of the way they came out at the beginning of the second half and put pressure on immediately. I mean, there's the chance, 2 minutes into the half when they press high, won the ball back from the short goal kick, and from then on, basically Serbia were really rattled and you're sort of waiting for the goal to come. It wasn't one of those games that's sort of 0-0 and you sort of, as time goes by, you're thinking, oh yeah, the better team is getting frustrated. They were just looking more and more like scoring until eventually they did. And, you know, they hit the woodwork twice as well as scoring twice. So
they moved the ball so brilliantly. And Barry, I was trying to work out when I was watching that second half, does it just look great when Brazil play intricate passing? Like, look better because it's in a Brazil kit and it says Brazil, and you just, that's what you expect from Brazil. Like, am I conditioned to want them to play lovely football? So when they do it, even sort of in an okay way, I think, well, that's amazing because it's Brazil. Or were they actually really good?
I suppose it could be both. I'm not sure what way you're conditioned, Max. I know you quite well, but not that intimately. They were hugely impressive, but it took them an hour to get going and hit their stride, I think. But when they did, there was only going to be one winner. And, you know, they pretty much won at a canter in the end. Milinkovic, Savic in goal for Serbia. He made some good saves. And I would not read too much into this performance. I thought Serbia played quite well in the first half. Like, it was a good defensive effort from them, but they didn't bring a huge amount to the party.
And you mentioned it, Jonathan, when they bring on, their bench is ludicrous. You know, we quite look at the England bench and think, actually, there's some really good attacking talent. But when you're bringing on, like, Rodrigo and then Jesus and Anthony, and did Martinelli come off the bench as well? Yeah, you know, like, it's sort of a staggering array of attacking talent.
They do have a plethora of fine talents. I do think, having obviously now we've seen all the teams, I do think England can match them in terms of depth of squad, bench-wise. They're the only other team who sort of, when they brought players off the bench, you still didn't seem to have any sort of dip in quality, I thought. Maybe Spain as well, but maybe a little bit less experienced, you know, the players they brought on. Younger players, obviously, the left-back, for example. But I thought they just didn't lose any kind of rhythm or there was no dip in tempo when the likes of Jesus and Martinelli and Rodrigo came on. And there's a bit of maybe an injury worry for Neymar. He went off under a bit of a cloud. I don't know if that's something that might be a problem, but they didn't, you know, they've got so many attacking options. And it was quite interesting to see Richarlison do so well, because it seemed, you know, that although he is that focal point for them, now he's kind of announced it and that will be his place. So there's a lot of competition for the, you know, the either side of him, because Rafinha I didn't think was incredible, but he's maybe the one that I thought maybe didn't perform as well as maybe the others, but he's still maybe on that right side preferred. So yeah, they've just got so many options. It's crazy, really. I really like Rodrigo. I struggle to see how he doesn't get in his team, but obviously when you see how well they perform, maybe it explains why.
In the build-up to this tournament, a lot of talk is about Neymar, Wilson, and you know, a bit like Messi, right? This is for his legacy, is for Brazil to win. It's really important. And we had lots of questions about him, basically asking if he's any good or not. Jamie said Neymar is a whisker away from being Brazil's all-time top goal scorer. He's also won 25-plus trophies, including the Champions League. How good of a talent do the panel think he is? Where does he rank in the pantheon of forwards? Did he ever reach his potential? Is the hype justified?
I mean, he's an extraordinarily gifted player. I don't know if you saw, there was a thing before the World Cup when they had Brazil players in a stadium and they had a drone going higher and higher and higher above the halfway line and dropping a ball. And it got, I think, with him, it was 35 metres and they dropped the ball. And you saw the other players just missing it completely, you know, their first touch, spooning it 40 yards away. And I think Richarlison, sort of looking very awkward, did control it. Neymar just sort of, you know, just sort of flicks it up and starts to keep it up. So it's absolutely extraordinary. See, he's a phenomenally gifted player. But there's always that question mark there, partly about his temperament, and that goes right back to when he was fairly young. And I saw him first time I saw him was in 2011 at the Copa America, when he really got pretty badly bullied by a really old, slow fullback for, was it Paraguay?
I like how you slowed down while saying it as well. Do you talk at the pace of the player that you were discussing? Goodness, when you start talking about Dennis Romagnol, you'll be going incredibly fast.
Well, I saw Dennis Romagnol, so I had to against RBC Wiesendahl once. Oh. While playing for PSV.
Anyway.
That was me speaking quickly. I don't know. Did that work?
Not quite. Enough. Doesn't matter.
And you know, he got very frustrated then, and sort of, I think he's never quite shaken that off. And then just as he seemed to be getting to his peak at Barcelona, and that forward line with him and Messi and Suarez worked so well together, they clearly got on really well together. And then, of course, he goes to PSG, and the problem with going to PSG is that he's actually only being judged on two or three games a season, because nobody cares what you do in France. You know, it's a very easy level for him. Yeah, his idea of going there to get out of Messi's shadow to win the Ballon d'Or, well, actually, it was the complete reverse of that, because you don't win the Ballon d'Or by beating, you know, Nantes and Metz and people. You win the Ballon d'Or by beating Real Madrid. And the fact they haven't won the Champions League, for which he has to, you know, he's obviously not the only reason, but as their record signing, as the highest profile player in that squad, at least until pretty recently when maybe Mbappe's overtaken him, He has to take responsibility for that. And I don't think his attitude there has particularly helped. You know, the stories about, yeah, having his 3-day birthday party and getting, you know, Emery to come and cut the cake and sort of dashing back to Rio for carnival and things. none of that has helped him be the best footballer that he could be.
Salvo must be very tired to dash back to Carnival. That's an incredibly noisy thing to dash back for. Martin Keown was keen to point out that Brazil looked, you know, just as good, if not better, when Neymar went off. Lars tweeted us, does Martin Keown feel joy, Barry? It's hard. I mean, you don't know how I'm conditioned. You don't know how Martin Keown's conditioned.
Yeah, I met Martin Keown once and had a quite long conversation with him about his family back in Galway and about Kenny Sansom, his former teammate. It wasn't a particularly joyous experience, but he seemed a nice enough guy to me. Very intense. You know, he fixes you with his laser-like stare and he could be asking you a question as innocuous as, how did you get here? And you sort of quaking in your boots. I quite like him as a pundit, actually. He gets stick. I see John Hartson's been getting stick as well for his co-coms. I think totally unjustified. I'm a big fan of Johnny Hartson's. But I'm not sure how that comment he made about Brazil being just as good when Neymar went off can be construed as him being joyless by Lars.
I mean, Brazil did create loads of chances in the last 10, 15 minutes. But Serbia clearly given up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were fighting for a point, and once they're 2-0 down, we're not going to get a point. So I just don't. I mean, maybe they are better without Neymar. I think that is entirely possible. I just don't think that game proved it. And Neymar played pretty well when he was on.
Stefan says, could one of you explain WTAF is going on with Alisson's facial hair? I can't remember who yesterday. Courtois is looking more and more like the policeman from Hello, Hello. But so is Alisson. I mean, I don't know if that's, you know, the greatest goalkeepers in the world just trying to look, all trying to look like the policeman from Hello, Hello. Or they've all been invited to a goalkeepers union party, which happens to be policeman from Hello, Hello fancy dress. I mean, if it is, I'm all for it. And the only other question is, does anyone else think the posh seats that, you know, it cuts to Roberto Carlos or Cafu? And those sort of armchairs, they just don't fit in a football. They just don't seem right for football. I don't know if anyone else has strong feelings about this. It's just they should be in a sitting room somewhere. I don't know.
I think that's quite a Middle Eastern thing. Because I remember I was at the Asian Cup in Lebanon in 2000. And that was a real feature of that tournament, the VIP box with the big leather armchairs.
Okay. I mean,
I think if you're singling out armchairs in stadiums as the one thing about this World Cup that seems slightly incongruous, you might need to have a look at the bigger picture. As an aside,
there goes my column for this week.
As an aside, I think the actor who played the policeman in Hello, Hello, subsequently
Officer Crabtree was his name.
Subsequently worked as a sub-editor on the Guardian Sports Desk.
Did he?
Did
he say, you've written morning, M-O-R-N-I-N-G? That's not how you spell it. That's devastating. There's just so many articles in the Guardian. It's not good if they were sub-edited by the police. Jonathan, do you know what we're talking about? Do you have any idea what we're talking about?
Absolutely not.
No, that's good. Oh, I'm pleased about that. Anyway,
the joy in your face, Max. I'm just laughing along with that. If you could see Max's face, the happiness.
You couldn't ask for a worse sub-editor of a newspaper. Like, literally on the whole planet, the worst person to sub-edit a newspaper. Anyway.
Anyway, should probably stress, just to make the lawyer's life easier, that the policeman from Hello, Hello is not a real person and is actually played by an actor who is English.
Anyway, that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll discuss Portugal's victory over Ghana. We'll compose ourselves and discuss Portugal's victory over Ghana.
Erst 8 Stunden Arbeit, danach zum Training und jetzt sollst du noch was Richtiges kochen? Ja, das geht. Mit HelloFresh. Wähle einfach protein- und vitaminreiche Rezepte aus und erhalte genau die richtigen Zutaten in deiner HelloFresh-Box. So planst du deine Woche und Mahlzeiten easy und landest nicht immer nur bei Pizza und Pommes. Jetzt kannst du bis zu 100 sportliche Euro auf deine ersten vier HelloFresh-Boxen sparen. Mit dem Code FSSport100.
Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. So, Portugal 3, Ghana 2. Ah, at the end, Barry, Iñaki Williams trying to do a Dion Dublin on Shea Given, a Gary Crosby on Andy Dibble, if I remember correctly, on Diogo Costa. It's such a shame, isn't it, that that didn't end up in an equaliser.
Yeah, it would have been hilarious. I think the Gary Crosby and Andy Dibble, he headed it out of Andy Dibble's hand.
Yeah, that's right.
Whereas Dion Dublin actually... Yeah, so basically, Diogo Costa, the Portugal goalkeeper, oblivious to the fact that Iñaki Williams was lurking behind him, hoping he'd throw the ball on the ground in front of him, threw the ball on the ground in front of him, prompting Iñaki Williams to dart forward, steal the ball, turn to try and shoot into the empty net, and he slipped. He slipped, Max, and only for that. The gods were smiling on Diogo Costa. And even at the final whistle, when Portugal had won 3-2, he was completely distraught at just thinking about the horror he had almost unleashed upon himself. And several teammates, including Cristiano Ronaldo, had to go and console him. But yeah, real heart-in-mouth moment for him. And I don't mind saying I was really disappointed that gravity got the better of Williams, or is he chosen the wrong stud length? But because it was quite an audacious thing for him to do, and Costa played right into his hands.
I don't know about you, Jonathan, but the interesting thing was, because I wasn't expecting it, I was sort of half watching, thinking, well, this game's done, and then I was like, what's happened here? And then, oh, I know it's the same question to Barry. I'm just really gutted about it. It just happened. I'm just really gutted.
Yeah, it would have been nice. It would have sort of been a fitting way to end a bit of a crazy game, to be honest. It was quite funny watching Ronaldo kind of semi-berate him as well after the full-time whistle. And for a young goalkeeper, I mean, it was quite funny because I was just thinking to myself, Costa, he's emerged now as the number one choice for Portugal, and a lot of people are talking about him as the next big thing. He's really good at saving penalties and that kind of thing. So I was just in the back of my mind thinking that he's had an all right game. And then he just commits this howler. He looked really disappointed with himself. So I'm sure he won't be doing that again anytime soon. But I do kind of wish that Iñaki had pulled it off and not slipped. It was maybe even a shout for a penalty, but I think he just literally slipped, didn't he? So, yeah, shame for Ghana.
So you did the minute-by-minute, Barry. Portugal probably deserved it, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, it was a dog of a game for the first hour. Played at a pedestrian pace. Cristiano Ronaldo missed a couple of decent chances in the first half, won an inexplicable miss from a header that you would expect him to score 100 times out of 100, and the other a good save from the Ghana goalkeeper. Interesting, I discovered before the game, Ghana brought three goalkeepers to this tournament who had four caps between them, because their two first-choice keepers are both injured. One of them plays for Charlton, Joe Wallacott. Being their number one, he broke a finger shortly before the tournament started, which is unfortunate for him. But, the first half was diabolical on ITV. Roy Keane said it was so bad it was making him really angry. And then at the second half, there wasn't much sign of improvement, to be honest. And after 15 minutes of the second half, Portugal got a penalty. I didn't think it should have been given. Others disagree with me. It was very touch and go. Mohamed Salah, who tackled Ronaldo or took the ball off his toe. 50-50 decision at best, I think. But anyway, the penalty was given. Ronaldo scored it, making him the first player in history to score in 5 World Cups. And then then things got lively. Ghana equalised quite quickly through Andre Ayew, who was very unimpressed to be taken off soon afterwards and replaced by his brother. And while he was remonstrating with the manager and taking the congratulations of his teammates on the bench, Portugal scored their second goal, got a third one quite quickly afterwards. Ghana pulled one back, and then there was the customary 9 minutes of added time, and it was in the 10th minute of added time that Diogo Costa almost gifted Ghana an equaliser. So, yeah, I don't really, you wouldn't call it a thriller because for 65 minutes it was diabolical, but it certainly perked up after that.
So Ronaldo, first man to score at 5 World Cups. Wilson, a quiz for you. Do you know who's stuck on 4? There are 4 players.
4 players.
That Mexican fella.
Nope.
Marquez.
No, to score at 5 World Cups. Marquez might have played at 5, but who's scored at 4?
Do you want to give me nationalities, or is that too
Argentina,
easy?
Argentina.
Batistuta?
No.
No.
Maradona?
No.
Messi?
Yes, correct. 1 point Barry.
I'm not going to lie, Max. This quiz is dying on its arse.
Yeah, but, you know, they might edit the silences out if we're lucky.
Lothar Matthäus?
No. There is a German. There are 2 Germans, in fact.
Thomas Müller and Jürgen Klinsmann?
No.
Rudi Völler?
No.
Lipowski?
No.
Closer?
Correct. 2 to go. There's a Brazilian and a German.
Pele.
Correct. Barry's 2 up. This is very exciting. Wilson absolutely devastated. Look at his face. Very upsetting.
Who's the nationality?
Another German.
Another German.
Müller.
Is it, what's he called? Scored the back header against England in 1970. Is it him?
I mean, I don't know who scored the back header against.
Is it Ziggy Helt? Ziggy Helt.
It's not Ziggy Stardust. It's Uwe Seele.
Uwe Seele. That's who I meant. Fucking fuck. I'm so tired.
Why are you so tired, Wilson?
Because there's football on all the time and I have to work and, like, you don't get to bed till 2 a.m. It just destroys you.
You look quite...
broken.
you look totally bereft. Would you agree, Jonathan Fadiba, with Barry's sort of summation of that game? Even though, you know, Ghana sort of made it interesting and Portugal weren't actually that great, it ended how it should. It would have been pretty scandalous if Ghana had got a point out of that.
Yeah, I'm really, this game kind of was very frustrating, I think, from a Ghana point of view. I think that I don't get this sort of, dare I say it, inferiority complex of certain African teams. I think that Portugal were there for the taking. I didn't understand the sort of Southampton 5 at the back, 3-2 of Ghana. And it just seemed like they were just waiting for Portugal to take the lead before trying anything. Then as soon as they did take the lead, they immediately equalised. And then as soon as they equalised, they took off their 2 best players who created the goal, Kudus and Andre Ayew. Kudus was having a really good game. He was the only player of Ghana that was actually breaking the lines and looking to push forward and, you know, that looked decent. The decision to take him off for Jordan Ayew, I think, was proved catastrophic. Jordan Ayew, I fought for 2 goals immediately after coming on, which led to the, you know, second and third goals. If you watch them back, he loses the ball. So I just feel like Ghana and, to a certain extent, Cameroon as well in the earlier game, kind of just waiting for the opponent to score before really trying when they're not actually that bad. Portugal, I agree, like, with what Barry said. Although they deserve to win, I don't think they really played that well, to be honest, Portugal. I thought they were pretty pedestrian. Rafael was a good substitute, and I would have thought that he has to start in future games. I think Ronaldo is similar to Manchester United. He slows things down up front, whereas Leao kind of sped it up a little bit when he came on. But of course, Ronaldo, you can't drop Ronaldo as the captain. So although Portugal, maybe you could say, deserved it, I still feel like Ghana didn't give the best of themselves. And I just don't get this kind of 5 at the back, wait till you're losing to start playing. And it just seemed like they all kind of wanted to lose, really. I thought Portugal were there to be had.
I thought Kudus was good, but not until quite late in the game when he started playing in a more advanced role. And it was something Ali McCoy's kept talking about on co-coms on ITV, saying that he was wasted back in midfield, where he apparently prefers playing. But once he moved forward a bit after Portugal scored and made a huge difference. João Cancelo had a very bad game by the lofty standards I've come to expect from him watching him play for Manchester City. I thought he was terrible. He was at fault for one of the goals as well. And yeah, I would certainly agree that the decision to take off Kudus when he just had direct involvement in the opening goal for Ghana was bizarre.
Is it both the IUs, Wilson, that frustrate you? Because here, Andre did quite well and Jordan had the bad time.
No, I'm a big fan of Andre and I'm a big critic of Jordan. So Dede Ayew's performance in the Cup of Nations quarterfinal against Tunisia in 2010, I think, is one of the all-time great individual performances. That he got kicked a bit and just kept going back. And then I can't remember if he scored the winner or set it up, but he was definitely instrumental in the winner in injury time. In extra time, sorry. Whereas Jordan Ayew, you know, if it's a bad decision to be taken, he will take it. And you look back, I mean, this will be in my column on Sunday. I found myself writing it again today. But, I can't write the Ronaldo one anymore. I've had to retire that. So I'm going to do my knocking Jordan Ayew column instead.
Which you probably can't do quite as often.
Yeah, but Germany in the 2014 World Cup were 2-1 down to Ghana. And Jordan Ayew broke into the left side of the box. And if he played the easiest square ball in the history of square balls, Asamoah Gyan would have tapped it into an empty net and Germany would have lost 3-1 and who knows what might happen. Germany might not have won the World Cup. And then how different the world could be. Because it was only 2 years after that we had Brexit, don't forget. And yeah, that might not have happened if Jordan Ayew had squared it.
Jordan Ayew's fault.
But he didn't. He shot, looking, going for glory for himself. And... it was saved. On came Miroslav Klose and I think equalised pretty much immediately. Germany got out with a draw and the world set off on this course that it's following now.
It's ended up with you being so tired. You were nodding furiously, Jonathan, at that.
I was literally about to say that same comment about the 2014 World Cup. Like, I feel like my entire adult life has been spent watching Jordan Ayew make mistakes in World Cups. You know, like every World Cup, the theme is like Jordan Ayew messing something up when Ghana have a great opportunity. So... I totally agree with that.
Well, and also Cup of Nations. Like, I mean, seriously, how much of my life have I spent watching Jordan Ayew be offside? Like, it happens like 10 times a game, right? And I must have seen him play 50, 60 times. So say each one's about 30 seconds. I mean, that's 5 hours. I spent 5 hours of my life watching Jordan Ayew be offside.
Should we praise Ronaldo a bit more? We sort of glossed over him scoring. We did a fun quiz, but we sort of glossed over him scoring in 5 consecutive World Cups. And I guess this pod is not... We don't praise Ronaldo that often, Barry. But that is some achievement, you know?
Yeah. I suppose it is.
Okay. Is anyone else? Anyone else have anything to say about the longevity of doing that? To span, what is that, 20 years you're spanning, aren't you?
16 years.
16 years. Jonathan?
I thought he was guaranteed to score today. Like, I think, obviously, Barry, not a fan of him at all, but I think there's an inevitability about Ronaldo. Even though, obviously, it's a penalty, you could argue it was a soft penalty, to be honest. I'm not even, if it was the other end, would it have been given? But there's just an inevitability about Ronaldo in those certain moments when you know he's going to score one way or another. And obviously... After all the hype and the talk and everything, I just felt before the match it was like guaranteed to score, and obviously he did. So hopefully I've got you out of that one, Barry.
I would rather focus on the 3 glorious opportunities he missed.
Yeah, that's true.
One of which was when, and how slow is Alexander Djiku, the Ghana centre-half, who got left trailing in his wake when Ronaldo was put through one-on-one against Laurent Atizigi, the Ghana goalkeeper. Now, it turned out he was offside, but he didn't know that, and Atizigi saved very well from as he tried to lift the ball over him. So, yeah, let's focus on those misses.
But I sort of feel this is what Ronaldo is now. He keeps breaking records or extending records, and everybody kind of has to say, oh, hasn't he been brilliant? Hasn't he done it for a long time? Isn't he a marvellous goal scorer? All of which is true. But I actually think far more significant, far more interesting is the fact he probably makes Portugal worse. Now, I think it's not as clear-cut with Portugal as it is.
Sounds like you're rehashing your column here, Wilson.
Don't take this away from me. I haven't got much left. I don't think it's quite as obvious with Portugal as it was with Manchester United, and as it will be for whichever Saudi club he joins, who I'm sure he'll be getting in the way of loads of young Saudi prospects. Maybe, in fact... stymieing an entire Saudi wave that they should be surfing having beaten Argentina. But I just think he slows everything down and he doesn't even finish particularly well now. His finishing has started to desert him as well. And the reason I say it's not as obvious for Portugal that he's deleterious to the team is they don't really have a centre forward, I don't think. I mean, we've got João Félix, who can play there, not you know, but he's not a sort of he's not a number nine. It sort of feels that as soon as Ronaldo does retire, we're going to go back to the Portugal conversation we used to have, which was why do they not produce centre forwards? Why, you know, why is Pauleta the only centre forward in the history of Portuguese football? I mean, apart from Eusebio and Ronaldo, who are obviously two quite big, big figures.
Helder Postiga, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I think that kind of proves my point with respect to the former Tottenham legend. But I sort of feel with Portugal that the quality of people like Bernardo Silva and Bruno Fernandes and Emerson Leão, they deserve better. They'd be a lot more fun to watch if they didn't have Ronaldo there and if they had a slightly more adventurous coach than Fernando Santos.
So did you say Emerson Leão and you meant Rafael Leão, or did you say two players there?
I said Emerson Leão, who's Brazil's goalkeeper in the 1974 World Cup. I meant... No, leave it in. Fuck it. I'm fucked.
Okay, that's fine. Anyway,
of course, Ronaldo isn't the only one getting on. Because look at Wilson here. He's sitting on empty. The tournament's only in its fifth day.
Well, Emerson Leão was, I think, one of the very first Brazilians to start doing advertising contracts. He advertised chickens and pants.
Right.
Not simultaneously.
I think chicken pant double. It's great. Not chickens in pants. With, you know, Brazilian quirk.
I can't remember anything at the minute. But I think that the word for chicken in Brazilian is the word they use for a goalkeeping mistake. So it was like a pun around that.
Ah, right. I see. Feels like with that sort of anecdote, we've reached the end of this game, haven't we? And we'll be back in a second in part three with the other games and any other business. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Two games to go then. Let's start with the goalless draw. Uruguay 0, South Korea 0. Joe Barton, screenwriter and friend of the pod, tweeted, Uruguay v South Korea. Let's find out once and for all whether having lots and lots of tattoos or absolutely no tattoos makes a difference to sporting aptitude. It turns out they cancel each other out. Christopher says, I'm on an absolute shocker at the moment. Two goals in the last six matches I've watched. Switzerland, Cameroon, Belgium, Canada, and the 4-0-0s. Why does every match that's so 0-0 on paper, it can't possibly be in reality, still end up 0-0? And yet it does. Although, Barry, I quite enjoyed this goalless draw.
Yeah, well, as goalless draws go, I suppose it was all right. I mean, there was no shots on target, but two off the woodwork, which led to the exchange, what was probably the most entertaining part of the game, where Danny Murphy on COCOMs said he couldn't figure out how a shot that hits the woodwork isn't on target. And Pien Muhlenstein, who was the commentator, just cut him off with a curt, because they're not on target. Duh.
Didn't we have that conversation on the pod?
Probably.
Troy Townsend. I think Troy Townsend's pretty sure that it's on target. I kind of see Danny's point.
No. There is no. Okay. So you've got, for instance, a bridge with 8 foot clearance, and you've got a lorry that's 8 foot two. So it hits the very bottom bit of the bridge. It has not kind of cleared the bridge. It has hit the bridge. In the same way, the ball has hit the bar and not the gap under the bar, which is the target, right, both for the ball and the lorry.
Well, what if the ball hits the bar and goes in and off the underside of the bar? That's presumably on target.
Well, that is on target. In the same way, if you just sort of scrape the very top of the van, you've hit the target of the... Don't make me do this.
You started it. I didn't understand until you gave me the lorry driving under a bridge analogy, and now I'm completely across it.
I was at this game, and I will say that as normal draws go, it was beautiful in that after 15 minutes, I had absolutely 100% confidence it was going to be 0-0. And so I wrote my match report almost before half time saying this will be 0-0. This was 0-0. And just talking about how old the Uruguayans are.
Well, I did wonder if you could have rehashed your Ronaldo column for Suarez in the fact that he can't press and that changes. You know, Uruguay have got quite an exciting midfield, haven't they? Bentancur's a lovely player. Valverde's been brilliant for Real Madrid. And you just thought Nunes is playing out wide on the left. That seems
not where he should be.
Well, I don't know, because I don't think he's a very good centre forward. I think he might be better coming from unusual positions. So I'm not sure which way round the causality is. Does Nunez have to play wide on the left because Suarez has to play? Or does Suarez have to play because Nunez can't really play through the middle? I'm not sure which of those two is true. But Suarez was dreadful. He had an awful game. I think he touched the ball 14 times, 3 touches in the opposition box, 1 shot which wasn't on target. Incredibly slow. He doesn't even seem kind of nasty anymore. He seems to have lost the ability to be irritating.
He's so old he's lost his teeth. He can't bite people. No. So, just as a gummy, anyway, you understand the whole thing.
And I didn't think Pellistri was particularly good either, which I thought at least he'd provide some pace and some energy, you know, given how young he is, but no.
What did you make of it, Jonathan?
I didn't think it was a terrible 0-0, but it was heading towards a 0-0. I think my kind of takeaway at the moment from the tournament, I suppose we're nearly close to the first round. Well, the first round of games is now done. I think, like, I'm not sure there's really that many top world-class strikers in world football anymore. Like, I think there's a bit of a dearth of, like, genuine world-class strikers. If you look back at World Cups previous, you know, you think of Batistuta or Romario or, like, strikers that you really look forward to watching at every tournament almost. And I feel like in this one, there's a bit of a lack of that. I mean, my conclusion from even the Cameroon, Switzerland game was almost that Choupo-Moting is actually one of the best strikers in the world on the evidence of this tournament in terms of the way the runs he made and how he played. Because there's not that many of them that really are that effective. Huang missed a huge chance.
Well, and the ones who are here are really old. Yeah, so you've got Suarez, you've got Lewandowski, you've got Messi, you've got Ronaldo. It's a tournament of really, really old strikers.
Yeah, I don't see any like genuine like top world class strikers. Maybe the two best are not even here, Haaland and maybe Benzema. So,
but even Benzema's 34, so you know he's another old striker.
Exactly. So Huang missed a massive chance for South Korea, obviously, which was glaring, and you know any striker of world repute should score that really. And then obviously Uruguay with Nunes didn't really do much. He was in and out of the game. Cavani came on, and again, you know he's aging. So it was an interesting game. I thought that South Korea tactically, like, they didn't really get Sun in behind, which was, I think, a point they made on the commentary as well, in the sense that he was sort of hanging around the box and taking long shots and things like that. So I don't think we learned a huge amount from either team, really, except that maybe then they're both okay but not amazing. The only other observation really was, I think I said it in the preview show, didn't I? Fede Valverde. I just think he's a brilliant midfielder. Nearly scored. And probably the highlight of the game was him celebrating that tackle as if... Yeah. As if he'd scored in the World Cup final.
I did wonder with Son as well, Barry, that he was played sort of wide left for South Korea as well, which isn't really where he plays for Spurs. And I wonder if they could have got him more central as well.
Yeah, I wonder about that. I wonder, you know, how injured is he? How much pain is his facing? And I always think players playing wearing those protective masks, it's got to be on your mind that you might ship a blow to the face. And he was largely ineffective throughout the game until, I think, quite late in the second half. He had a shot from distance that went narrowly wide after the Uruguayan keeper giving the ball away, Keylor Navas.
Sorry, did you say Keylor Navas?
Keylor Navas.
He's Costa Rican, isn't he?
Oh, I did.
Yeah, he was playing yesterday for Costa Rica. unless he's magic. Somewhere, we've got 3 pods in the top 4 of the episodes in the sports charts. Fuck knows how.
There's a lot of goalkeeper confusion going on today.
Anyway, say it again and they can edit it in or out. So who is it? Talking about.
It's not Muslera. It's the other one. God, I did. I mean, I was fucking out the game. Jesus Christ. It was Sergio Alvarez.
Yeah, so he had a shot from distance after the Uruguayan keeper, Sergio Olivares, gave the ball away. And that went sort of narrowly wide. But, yeah, it was just a bad day at the office from Sonny, I think.
Joe says, why is it when Edison Cavani and Darwin Nunes play together, does it feel like I'm watching the music video to More Than Words by Extreme? I enjoy that question. I'm just trying to see if anybody, as you Wilson, probably doesn't know that song.
I made a music joke yesterday on Twitter, if you saw it.
No, I didn't see it. What was
it? The last tube station on the Green Line, which is where you have to go to go to the Ahmed Bin Ali Stadium, is called Mall of Qatar. which is right. Probably my favourite Wings song.
Ah, really, yeah. Quite good. Yeah, okay, well done. Let's hastily move on to Switzerland 1, Cameroon 0. Not a modern-day classic, I think we can all agree. Tony says, Mbolo looked so sad when he scored against the country of his birth. Is the non-celebration celebration appropriate in such circumstances? Yeah, he was born in Cameroon when he was 5. His mother moved to France. Whilst there, she met her future husband, a Swiss national. So the following year, he moved to Basel, and that's why he plays for Switzerland. I would say, Jonathan, completely acceptable. I mean, I think it's more acceptable than, like, you've been on loan at Bristol Rovers for, like, 10 minutes, so you won't play. Like, you're actually born in that country. Like, I think I probably might give you a pass.
I think from an African football's perspective, it's not going too well, is it? I mean, Mbolo, born in Yaoundé, scoring against Cameroon. I think I saw George Weah getting pelters for Tim Weah when he... I think he's taken time off his presidency to spend the time watching his son. And I think a lot of the Liberian population were giving him pelters for that. Especially the fact that his son chose USA. So from that point of view, there's been a few sort of jabs in the hearts of African countries. But it's another thing about top strikers in this game. You know, Mbolo, he's not one of the world's best forwards or anything, but he offered that, you know, that just that little bit of extra thrust. It wasn't the best game. Again, it was not much between the two sides. I didn't feel Cameroon in the first half were quite good. They created a few openings, and that's what I was saying about Choupo-Moting, the way he held the ball up and brought others into play like Mbeumo. From the games you've seen in this tournament so far, he's kind of stood out. I'm not for 1 minute saying he's one of the world's best strikers, but in this tournament I'm saying he's one of the few that's actually stood out and looked like a kind of a target man who can do well. Although he tired and got taken off in the second half, Choupo-Moting, he seems to see, maybe he's not used to it with Bayern being, you know, in and out of the team. He seems to struggle with nights for 90 minutes. But yeah, I just feel like, particularly the West African nations, that so far in this tournament, Senegal's a bit of a caveat because they missed Mane so much, and I really felt that with Mane they might have beaten the Netherlands, but I just felt that Cameroon and Ghana today, they seem to sort of struggle to raise the tempo when the game is kind of a 0-0 and it's there for the taking. I just feel like that some of the West African sides don't take that initiative. And as soon as Switzerland, sort of the second half, it seemed like the manager at halftime maybe instructed them to maybe go down the right-hand side a bit more. Down Cameroon's left, they were quite weak, and the cross obviously came in from that right side for Mbolo to score. So I think, yeah, I suppose you can detect from this, I'm not too thrilled with the African sides at this tournament so far, unfortunately.
Dave says, I know he's not on, but a new career for Andros beckons after his excellent debut on COCOMs. One space for one Townsend in the Football Weekly hot seat? Or, like, you know, what do we do? Do we sub out Troy, Barry, bring in Andros? Is that a bit harsh?
Well, that'd be like the famous occasion when Ider Gudjonsson came on to replace his dad in the Icelandic national team, wouldn't it? I think Andros still has plenty left to offer as a player once he recovers from his knee injury, so I'm happy with Troy at the moment.
We all love Troy, to be totally honest. We do. We do love Troy. But I thought Andros is a brilliant... I think I really like him on the radio, and I really like him actually as co-coms. Actually tells you things that you might not have seen or explains them really well, I think.
Like myself in that regard, Max.
Well, absolutely.
Actually, I noticed in this game, I don't know if Andros pointed it out, but like this game was between two teams who, in our preview, I think we said they're two teams that will struggle to score, and they were both a bit toothless. Switzerland marginally less so, and we also said that Rigobert Song, has the manager of Cameroon, has a reputation for being a bit tactically naive, I suppose, putting it kindly. And I did notice that his policy seemed to be a John Beck at Cambridge United style, hit it long to the channels and then try and get the ball into the box. And it worked a bit in the first half, but they never really looked like scoring, did Cameroon?
No. Matty says, I know this may not be the biggest issue with this World Cup, but for colourblind viewers such as me, Switzerland-Cameroon is nearly unwatchable. A simple kit change from either would have made all the difference. Mad how football can't seem to get this right. Yeah, I think that they have protocols in the Premier League, but that does seem a bit of an oversight, doesn't it? Any other business? Gareth Southgate has confirmed Harry Kane is fit to play. What a roller coaster it's been. Harry is fine. He has worked slightly separately from the group, but all good for Friday night. James Maddison, the only one who didn't take part in training, he was left inside. Seems a bit harsh, doesn't it? Leaving. What's he done wrong? What have they done? Poor James Maddison. It's just there. You know, take him to the World Cup. There's a big hoo-ha. It's the big story. And then he just has to peer through the window looking at everybody else. FIFA's confirmed that fans with rainbow wall bucket hats and rainbow flags will be allowed entry into the stadium for Wales' game against Iran on Friday. All World Cup venues have been contacted and instructed to follow the agreed rules and regulations. It's not for me to say that FIFA is sort of making it up as they go along.
There's actually, at the stadium today, now, I presume that this happens at other stadiums, but there was just as you went in, on the left side, there's a little area barriered off, like square. Along the side of it, it said flags and banners evaluation area, which I'd really like to believe that it actually is that, and that if you're a nation who's thinking, maybe we should lose the Union flag from off our flag, what could we go for? You could take it along, and they were... have you maybe try a slightly deeper shade of red? Have you thought of that? Or is that a bit similar to Romania? Can you not see something a bit different? Or banner, you take long. Yeah, have you thought of, I don't know, you would maybe like space the letters out a bit to sort of squash up at the end? Or how about making it a bit less rainbowy?
Yeah, I mean possibly, because I don't know exactly what they're going to do with all these stadiums. After the World Cup is, Fiona Bruce could take Antiques Roadshow there. And just, if you just put a sticker over the E, then people could just bring their flags to be valued by like an old man with a beard. Today we're in Doha, lots of nice old middle class British people going, I was just found this in my loft. I don't know what it is. It's a flag. Anyway, Chapello says, having seen lots of the fans from around the world with various outfits on and face paint, do you think it's just a bit touristy football fans? Would or have you ever done it? Have you ever gone face paint or outfit to a football match? Looking around, Barry.
No.
Wilson.
I mean, I have worn a replica shirt. I have worn a scarf.
Jonathan, what state of dress up have you gone into a football match?
Face paint, not for me, I think. Replica shirt, no problem with that. No half and half scarf.
I think I did have the England flag face painted.
Oh, Max.
2006 England's Trinidad in the World Cup.
So you were an adult.
I was an adult.
Oh, Christ. Oh, Max.
Sorry about that. I don't think I had the whole... Oh, hang on a sec. No, I had, like, a flag of each country on my cheek.
Each country said... You had a half and half face.
I had a half and half face, yeah. I did. Modern football, everything's wrong with it. I think someone was doing them quite well. I'll see if I can find a photo. I think I might have done face paint. In my gap year in Australia when England played Tunisia in 98. Got to be honest about these things. I was young. Speaking of gap years, did you see Jesse March has just climbed Machu Picchu? I'm very pleased for him that he's decided to use this break to go and, I'm sure Leeds fans are furious that he's not on the training ground with, the two players that are left. But, nice picture of him and his family at Machu Picchu I saw on Twitter today. Zvonimir says, is Wilson and Barney's roommate dynamically more a double pivot or a striker tandem? How's it going with Barney?
Absolutely fine. I don't see much of him because we're both working. And so, one of us gets in at half one, next one gets in at half two, and we sort of see each other for half an hour over breakfast the next morning. That's it.
Okay. So you haven't filmed the Morecambe and Wise in bed with little hats yet?
I mean, there's not a double bed in the flat, so it'd be very hard to do. Well, unless Barney's got a double. Maybe Barney's got a double. Maybe he's got the better room. He probably deserved it, to
it's
be
possible.
Fair. Yeah.
It's possible.
No, it's two singles in my room. I assume the other two rooms are the same.
Mick Beale might be going to Rangers. He might not. He turned down Wolves, didn't he? But I suppose if you're going from Queen's Park Rangers to Rangers, like, you might have some kit that you wouldn't have to change, in a sense. Kolo Touré expects to become the Wigan Athletic manager in the next couple of days. That is... exciting for him, isn't it? I can't say it's not exciting for me. It's exciting for you, Barry.
Where is it? He was working as someone's assistant, isn't he?
Is he Pep's assistant? Am I made that up? Klopp's assistant. Is he Klopp's assistant?
No, I don't think it's...
No, Brendan Rodgers. Brendan Rodgers.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I gave him a couple of promotions there, didn't I, Golo? Finally, friend of the show, Paul Watson, who is boycotting the World Cup. We'll get him on at some point to find out if he's had a nice time. But Kitmas is back, so it's a really good thing. Founded by him and his wife, and his brother helps him out, distributing shirts to young football fans with the help of loads of clubs. It started small and it's getting bigger, and it's a really lovely thing to do. It's spread to Canada already. You can help by donating money, donating a shirt, setting up your own version of Kitmas with your club or supporters group, and we'll get him on to chat about it. Just go to his Twitter page, Paul Watson, or Google Kitmas. And there you go. And that'll do for today's pod. Thank you, Jonathan Wilson.
Cheers, thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan Vadibba.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Barry Glendenning.
You're welcome.
If you want to hear more about what it's like to be in Qatar for this World Cup, you can listen to Friday's episode of Today in Focus. Michael Safi reports on why, in trying to keep politics out of the tournament, FIFA's managed to make it the most political World Cup to date. Football Weekly was produced by Lucy Oliver. Our executive producer is Danielle Stevens.
This is The Guardian.
Erst 8 Stunden Arbeit, danach zum Training und jetzt sollst du noch was Richtiges kochen? Ja, das geht mit HelloFresh. Wähle einfach protein- und vitaminreiche Rezepte aus und erhalte genau die richtigen Zutaten in deiner HelloFresh-Box. So planst du deine Woche und Mahlzeiten easy und landest nicht immer nur bei Pizza und Pommes. Jetzt kannst du bis zu 100 sportliche Euro auf deine ersten 4 HelloFresh-Boxen sparen mit dem Code FSSPORT100.
Neue Reifen in den Zeiten, also die spare ich mir.
Besser? Du sparst dieses Jahr bei der Kfz-Versicherung. Jetzt bei ATU günstig Reifen kaufen oder Räder wechseln und eine von 100 Kfz-Versicherungen für ein Jahr gewinnen. Mehr auf atu.de. Bei Auto besser.